Welcome to the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, where we talk with martial arts practitioners about their histories and the influence that their practice of martial arts has on their lives. You are listening to the free version of this podcast, which is abbreviated. Help support this program by considering to subscribe to us on Patreon, where you will get 4 full-length podcasts each month, 1 week before the YouTube release date. The cost is that of about 1 coffee shop coffee per month. Go to www.patreon.com/malmag to subscribe. That is www.patreon.com/malmag. If you would like to purchase single full-length episodes of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast, visit our Gumroad page at malmag.gumroad.com, and that is malmag.gumroad.com. This week, I sit down in Santa Monica with martial artist, actor, and filmmaker Henry Mortensen, who has a background in fencing as well as Jeet Kune Do, Kali, Muay Thai. Let's get to know him. Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to the Martial Art Lifestyle Podcast. And this week, I've actually been invited over here to Santa Monica to this gentleman's office and workspace. It's really kind of an interesting little place. This is Henry Mortensen, and I've known Henry for, I don't know, quite a while. You're kind of one of those interesting guys. You were at the academy, and then you were kind of gone for a while, and then you're back around. And but you've been, you know, realistically, what I'd say, a long timer.
Yeah.
And he was gracious enough to invite us up here to his office in Santa Monica, which is actually, it's not far from the academy and not far from where I live either. I'm very familiar with the neighborhood. It's actually kind of a cool little industrial, if you say, that area of Santa Monica. And used to, I think, be kind of a heart of industrial area because the railroad tracks obviously come through here, and that's all been converted now to the metro line.
Yeah, which is a weird, was the same place where it was until the 30s or 40s.
Right.
And then they rebuilt it, 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was that quick, hurry, cover-up thing, I think, by General Motors, right?
Yeah.
It said, no, we want you to all buy cars out here. So they covered up the railroad tracks. And when they decided to put a metro line in here, they said, well, let's just kind of go, because the tracks are still there. They're just down there. And there we go. Anyway, enough about L.A. history. Let's talk about Henry Mortensen a little bit.
We're here at Percival Press, the book company that I work at. Like Tim said, I've trained at the Inosanto Academy on and off for the past, 20 years, about.
Wow. Definitely meet you a long time.
Yeah. Started when I was 15. I didn't do the little dragons program.
To 13, yeah, 15. We're like, you're too big.
Yeah, especially me. I was already 6 feet tall. Like then, so
you want to go in and toss little kids around?
Yeah. So then I had the opposite experience where I was the one teenager in Sifu Yori's classes.
Oh my god. Yeah. 20 years ago. That's that. You know, I've been around the academy now, I think, about that long, since they moved to the Marina Del Rey location. And I know from the group that was in their training at that time, it was a very different type of group than now, and which means that the classes had a bit more contact.
Yeah,
I should say, than they do now.
Definitely more contact. Sifu Yori's classes were a little bit more hands-off in the teaching, too. Mm-hmm. It was sort of, here's the model to follow, and then
sink
go
or
for
swim.
It. Yeah, sink or swim. Once I got to 18 to my, through my early 20s, on summers when I was in college, because I went to college in New York, then I kind of liked that vibe. I was into the heavy contact and stuff, but when I first started, it was a little difficult at times because there was still a lot of professional fighters or aspiring fighters who were training there, a lot of European and Asian visiting students who were there for maybe a month at most, and so they wanted to train all out while they were there, and if I happened to be their partner.
Right, exactly. You got to be the punch dummy.
Yeah,
professional martial artists, people who owned schools. There were more law enforcement and military guys, from trainers to actual people who were in those things. Yeah, so it was a little
little different crowd.
Yeah. And it was still, I mean, it was still the same, you know, safety equipment. And
Yeah. I don't want people to get the impression that it's, you know, better, worse, more dangerous or whatever. It's just, it was just a different approach.
Yeah. It was a different, it was a different group of people that had different goals and what they wanted out of the training and what they wanted, how they wanted to apply it.
Certainly. And as we're, I think what we're trying to imply is it'd be a lot more intimidating to a 15-year-old than necessarily now.
Yeah. And I think I started with it was called, I think it was called Junfan, the classes.
Okay.
Then it was called Junfan or Junfan Kung Fu. And then it was changed to Jeet Kune and then JKD. Now is I think what it says on the schedule.
Yeah, Jeet Kune still, I think, because it's the legal issue of what they're saying and putting in print and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, well, we all know what we're doing there. So it's,
The teaching style kind of reflected that, though, too, because it was it was a sort of more codified curriculum and a sort of more set drills, whereas the classes now have a more of a range of, there's a certain curriculum that we cover, but then there's a lot of sort of personal things that the teacher likes,
right?
You know,
yeah, and that's the difference, I think, between the approach of someone like Sifiori and then basically, you know, you've got three of us filling in those big shoes right now. So you got Freddie and Atticus and myself, and certainly there's going to be a little different approach in there, especially from the eras that those guys trained, and then, you know, kind of my collection of over those eras as well, from a, you know, from a distance, from another teacher who came from another era, and all that, and it makes it a little bit interesting. Where I think Yori kind of wanted to give everyone, well, he's Japanese, so he definitely approached it with, you know, a structure, for sure. And then there was, I think he was wanting to take you through the historic progression, essentially.
Right.
That would be my best description of what he did.
And we were very strictly right lead in those classes.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Then, too.
Yeah.
I remember. And on Wednesdays, Guro had a mixed martial arts class I would take before that class. And that's where, until I started taking other classes, anything that was not from the sort of traditional Junfan approach that I learned, whether it was Thai boxing or Filipino martial arts or jiu-jitsu or silat, was all mixed together in that class.
Oh, yeah.
Which I do once a week. And I had done fencing just before that, and then as a little kid, karate.
Okay.
Which was, I think, sort of, there was a little bit more, I think there still sort of is, I think, you probably know more about the application process. Is it, when I was signing up, they were a little on the fence, I think, maybe because I was 15, but because I had had some relevant experience training before, they were like, okay, you can go into the adult classes. I don't know if there's as much of a wanting people to have previous experience now.
No, not now. I think in the past,
right.
And I think there was the idea of that, because I think they wanted to potentially work with a particular crowd, because I mean, I think that's kind of how it was in the past,
right?
You know, with Bruce Lee in particular, is, you know, if we kind of look at the history, I think Ted Wong was the only guy that he had taken on that really didn't have any experience before. He was definitely grabbing guys with experience, like you know, a lot of Kenpo guys that Guru was bringing in, obviously, and then guys with other backgrounds as well. And so I think there might have been either a spoken or unspoken, again, you know, don't quote me on this on the podcast, this is just, you know, my impression, that there was a desire, but not 100%, desire to have people that have some experience, so there's at least a base. Now, the funny thing about that is, you know, Dana, right? So Dana goes back to an era where she was, I think, one of three females there training, which was basically Dana, Paula, and Graciela Casillas. Okay. So, you know, talk about a, you know, group of badass females. And she said it was always interesting that people would say, well, I've got a black belt in this, and I've got a black belt in that. And her comment was just like, well, I've got pink toe shoes, because she had that ballet background. So she was one of the definitely one of the people who in a era a while back that was able to at least surpass that. So I don't know if it was an official dogma or whether it was, you know, we really would like you to have, but, you know, if you can kind of keep up with it, you know, it's probably good to anybody. If you can kind of talk your way through it and then you can keep up, you're probably okay. So you're probably in a period where they were kind of backing off that a little bit.
Yeah, it was the like, when I started was like the last year in Westchester.
Oh, okay.
And it was still where it was on the cement floor, except for grappling classes they would roll out the mat.
Yeah, even the new location was like that for a while. They had that mat that went about one third of the floor.
Yeah.
And then it was about, I would say, late first decade of the 2000s that they finally put in some puzzle mats, I think, initially. Yeah. And then we ended up with the tiger mats that we have now, or zebra mats, zebra tiger, one of those striped creatures.
It's the off-brand one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There we go. Chinese knockoff. So you started in karate then. How old were you?
Four or five. It's a place that it's actually, first it was in Santa Monica and then it was where next the part of, Rainbow Foods that's next to, Vans. That building was, used to be a karate dojo.
Wow.
That's where it was most of the time I was taking classes there. I think I stopped around like 8 years old or 9 years old. But it was it's a pretty cool system, actually. I wish I'd kept up with it more. It is Tenshin was the name, and it's a blend of, I think, I can't remember exactly what kind of karate, but maybe Goju Ryu, something like that. I think a Okinawan, but something very hard, and then mixed with Tai Chi as sort of the inner soft side of their training. And the kids' classes were a little bit just, you know, kids' karate classes. And the adults had a mixture of Tai Chi classes and then karate classes, which my dad took a little bit while I was training there. But I just, as a little kid, got to, I think I had a brown belt with one or two stripes out of three or four. You know, I was a couple grades away from getting black belt.
Wow.
And
you stuck with it for a handful
for
of years.
For a while, yeah. But I got that kid thing of not wanting to go to another thing after school and just faking stomach aches and like, I don't want to. And my parents finally were just like, look, I mean, if you're going to be like this, do you want to just stop? I'm not driving you to karate if I have to drag you.
That's funny.
And so, I stopped, which I do regret because also being so close to black belt, which especially as a kid doesn't mean that much, but still it would be nice to have.
Yeah. It's a shame. You know, I think Rudy talks about giving, you know, kids glass diamonds on a playground. They look at it like it's glass or something, you know, and it's the same here. And it's, you know, I have those two teenagers that I train and I keep trying to do the same thing with them. Like, don't do this. Trust me. You'll regret it potentially later. Do this, stay with this. You'll eventually get to the other thing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's always an interesting perception position, I guess we could call it, maybe.
I remembered, I didn't remember a lot from it later, but I remembered one or two of the most basic katas, and then there was a Tai Chi thing that he taught once I got to brown belt that I kind of remember, that it was kind of like a bull pie, basically, like a slow, like it was
so just like
kind of like, it's like, it's just an in place thing. It's like out and then like kind of in and then into the, I think there were more motions than that, but it was kind of, it was just this slow like Tai Chi version of it. Yeah.
That's cool.
In the air. And I learned how to do a jumping front kick, which I retained that. Until later, which is cool how to do that, which then helps you do other jumping kicks. So just the concept of the lifting one knee and then kicking with the other leg.
Ah.
knew what the term sidekick, roundhouse kick, uppercut, hook, like I knew what those meant from those classes already. Later, also around when I started, my dad's an actor and he was in a Yakuza movie and I was in another Yakuza movie around the same time, and Ninja Turtles were a huge thing. So, so that's kind of what piqued my interest in martial arts and in Japanese culture and led me to start taking karate lessons. Learning from the guys on set, playing the Yakuza guys, this actor, Ryo Ishibashi, who was in both the movie my dad was in and Blue Tiger, the one I was in, playing a Yakuza guy. He's a singer, musician, sort of like 80s rock, kind of punky band. And then had an acting career playing a lot of Yakuza and hard-boiled,
slick back hair. Well, and this was guys. The 80s into the 90s.
Yeah,
right?
So
everything Japanese was kind of, culturally big.
Yeah.
At that point, too.
Just them showing me their nunchuck and sword stuff in between on the set and got me into it. And then started doing karate. But unfortunately, didn't stick with it.
So was it the art that turned you off, or did you just gravitate to different interests at the time?
I think some of the amount of strictness mm-hmm. and discipline to it probably turned me off a little bit as a kid, like made me want to go less. Whereas, and I think by the time I was, 7 or 8 and a brown belt, it was a little bit more technical and more strict structure all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Whereas starting out, it was more just like run around in a circle and then punch a pad. just have fun with it. I have a vague memory of sparring. We used to spar with the belly protectors, mm-hmm. the sort of like Taekwondo ones, and the headgear and the red foam, hand protectors and feet protectors.
Oh yes, the old Junri stuff, yeah. Macho brand, yeah, love that.
And I remember my sparring mask was like too high in the cheeks, and so we had to like cut off part of it and like duct tape.
That's funny. Over it.
I think it was sort of, it could have been any class at that age. I think maybe the strict structure of those classes in particular turned me off, but mm-hmm. Most things for kids is going to have that to,
to get degree. A base. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether it's baseball or what.
Yeah. It could have been, I did, drum lessons and bass lessons around the same ages and a little past that. Mm-hmm. I ended up stopping drum lessons and continuing just bass lessons, and it was a similar thing, and that was less, and it's just hard to have self-discipline as a kid, I think, for most kids.
Yeah.
And when it's a class that really at that point, as far as my parents were concerned, it was it was for me, and if I'm not enjoying it, they don't want to pay for it and drive me to it.
That's absolutely understandable. I can imagine.
So they're not going to try that hard to make me go.
Now, was martial arts their recommendation, or was it something that you said you wanted to do? I mean, it's interesting at 4 or 5.
I think it must have been a combination of both. I'm not sure, because I started at 4 or 5. I don't know if I had a concept of martial arts lessons, to go about doing that. But I was, playing with sticks, pretending there were swords, and running around doing all that stuff and into it.
A lot of kids do.
And I think my dad was pretty athletic growing up and did a lot of sports, and he was always looking for physical activities mm-hmm. that I would like to give me that some kind of structure and discipline, and also just have something physical mm-hmm. to do. And I wasn't as much of a sports person as he was. So I think a lot of the time he would try and, when there was something that I had interest in that was a physical activity, he would try and
foster it. That. Yeah.
So I think it might have been something he found, especially because he also did, he liked the Tai Chi classes.
Oh, cool.
So he did some of those.
Good. Well, it kind of worked out, at least with that.
Yeah. And then I have enough muscle memory of it that I can, like, imitate a karate style, you know? Like, I remember outside block, inside block, down block.
Right.
Reverse punch, chop, you know, and the way that we were taught to do uppercut, which was part of it for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, yeah. I mean, if it was an Okinawan style goju, because I started Shorinryu, mm-hmm. Related Okinawan style. And there is, I can think particularly in the Haji series of kata, there are these uppercut maneuvers. And those, as I've kind of mentioned before in a lot of different conversations with people, and including, I think, some of these podcasts, that particular series of kata really perked my interest again when we started doing the Jurus and Silat. Because I'm like, wait, know some of these movements. And I think,
Yeah, because it was like a cover and then uppercut. Yeah, exactly. It is kind of like the,
Yeah. Uh-oh, I turned a light on in Henry's head here.
Yeah, because I remember part of the technical way in at Tenshin Kai that we were supposed to do the uppercut. It was like cover first and then uppercut.
Yeah.
And so it must have been, a similar kind of thing to the Jiros where it's actually, maybe it's even an arm strike, I don't know.
Yeah, or it even could be a trap, it could be a grab. I think there's a lot of particular interpretations that it could have. And it's really fascinating, you know, when you get... Yeah. That'll be one of those rabbit holes you'll find yourself up late at night YouTubing and doing this, and then you'll curse me going, damn it, why did you put that in my head? And this concludes the abbreviated version of the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast. Please click the like and subscribe buttons, as well as the notification bell. Also consider subscribing to the full-length podcast at www.patreon.com/malmag or purchasing individual full-length episodes at malmag.gumroad.com. Thank you for listening to this episode with Henry Mortensen. Coming up next week, we have a corporate security specialist, Miguel DaCosta. Check out the Malmag store at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and click on the store tab. There, you will find a full selection of Timmy B's brand sticks for FMA and Kirby Kerbong, as well as Timmy B's and Dos Manos t-shirts. Many more products coming soon. Also, click on our courses tab to purchase online courses, right now featuring a course in the Dos Manos stick of FMA. More courses to come. This show is produced by Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine. Visit us at www.martialartslifestylemagazine.com and enjoy the free version of our online magazine with articles, a recommended schools page, and a worldwide events calendar. Music by Jack L. Relic. Martial Arts Lifestyle Magazine and the Martial Arts Lifestyle Podcast are trademarked and copyrighted by TNT LLC.